Get Lazy.
This interview is brought to you by GetLazy.net, the best lazy town forum on the net.
Hello and welcome to this interview from GetLazy.net. My name is Chris Crow, and joining me from Iceland via Skype is Máni Svavarsson, the music composer for our favorite television show, Lazy Town. Máni, how are you doing?
Hi, Chris. I'm doing fine. Happy to be with you guys.
I sent out a call to some Lazy Town fans to submit questions for you to answer here today, and the great majority of these questions are directly from fans. I'm really excited to conduct this interview, and your fans are really excited to hear it. So how about we just jump right in?
I'm ready.
So our first question comes from our good friend Pook, who is from the Netherlands, and she wants to know how you got into musical composition.
Well, I think I have to go way back, so I'll just go way back and explain that. Yeah. I've been interested in music, since I remember, almost 4, 5, 6 years old, sneaking into my neighbor's house, he had a big piano and was constantly playing the piano. Both of my parents were musicians, and they kind of noticed that I was really into that. So they started giving me little keyboards and organs, and that evolved into like this double-decker Yamaha organ when I was about 13. And it had a little drum machine. But instead of playing songs on that people used to do, kind of like Beatles song or whatever you would play, I started writing songs really early on, 12, 13. I was constantly trying to write my own music, and I don't know why. But that evolved into joining groups like you do when you're 14, 15 years old. For some reason, I started writing the songs for those kind of early groups. 17, 18, the 80s were hitting us pretty badly.
Yeah.
So I was in a group called Cosa Nostra, and that was a big 80s group here in Iceland. And I wrote the songs for that group, and so I was just constantly writing songs. But I think it kind of really kicked in when I was about 22, 23 years old, when a friend of mine decided to make a movie. We had been in school together, and he wanted to make a movie. And this movie evolved about a group trying to make it here in Reykjavik. The name of that group was Piece of Cake. And we basically formed a group around that movie with that name, Piece of Cake. And that group had a live outside of the movie. That was kind of in the 90s, so the music had moved from the cold synthesizer music from the 80s into kind of more techno music. I wrote the songs for that group as well. So after that, group kind of just stopped. I tried to make a name for myself in kind of commercial music, making jingles and stuff like that. But that wasn't a decision. It just evolved that way because I could write melodies. And I think somebody in that business noticed, maybe you can write us a little melody for this product. And slowly that took over what I was doing at the time. And I decided just to try to live on music. So I was writing commercials and jingles for radio stations and TV stations for a little while. I think like 3, 4, 5 years. Yeah, so maybe, I don't know, this one exact time when I decided to do that, it just evolved in this way, and I was always trying to write my own music instead of copying other people's music. We have groups here in Iceland that will travel around the, clubs or the country and play popular music today, but I was never in that. I was always trying to write my own stuff.
And this was mainly a hobby for you up until about your 20s or so, is that right?
Yeah, it was a hobby, until I was like, 25, 26, I think. Yeah, around that time. Because Iceland is such a small country, it's difficult to kind of make a living out of being a musician or a composer in Iceland. It's a pretty tough job because they don't pay the amounts that are paid in the big world, so to say.
If music was just a hobby, what was your plan for your career before you actually became a professional musician?
Well, I had decided when I was about 21 years old, and actually about that time, 21, I sold all my synthesizers and drum machines. I sold all the stuff and decided there's no future in music and I was never going to do that stuff ever again. And I had decided to be an industrial designer, kind of design, not art, but things for the industrial industry, like coffee mugs or door handles or lamps.
That's very miscellaneous, I would say.
Yeah, but that's what kind of industrial designers do. They work on kind of cool solutions for everything. So I really wanted to get into that. And I had even plans to apply for a school in Norway to study that. Never quite did it. But I went to a school here in Iceland called the Industrial, I think it's called the Industrial University of Iceland or something like that. I went there for a couple of years and I thought that would be a good starting point before my huge career as an industrial designer.
In an alternative universe, you would be, working as a big shot in IKEA, yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely. Yeah, you mentioned that your parents were musicians. Were they like a big inspiration to you, or did you have any other kind of inspirations like on the radio or any bands that you liked when you were that age?
I wouldn't say my parents were inspirations when it came to music, because when I got born, they kind of quit their music career back then. You know, my mother stopped singing. She was a singer, and my father had his own group. He was a drummer. So they both kind of stopped and decided to settle down, and my father started a record publishing company. When I was doing music in the 80s, late 70s, their music was a bit dated for me to get kind of any inspiration from that music. But I think because my father also had a radio show, and he was on the radio every Sunday, and he used to prep his episodes back in the house playing. I remember him playing records and choosing songs for his show. So I would listen to all sorts of music day in and day out. He played all sorts of music. I remember him playing all these albums, choosing songs, and coming home with albums from the radio station. And I think that was maybe an inspiration or a really good background. I think some people will maybe grow up with their parents listening to just one kind of music, you know, their favorite group, let's say, Queen or the Beatles. And that's all they hear day in and day out. But I got to hear everything from classical music to jazz music and even old, really old recordings from music in the 20s. And I think that was an inspiration when I think back. But regarding other kind of inspirations at that time, I think it's just what was popular at the moment, really. There was nothing specific I was listening to. Well, actually, Kraftwerk, the German kind of techno group, I always listened to them. But when I look back, I can't say my music has been influenced by them. It's more their use of technology that I found really interesting, and you know, how you can hook up all these machines to a computer and so on.
I remember once you telling me that you don't know how to read music. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. My parents tried to send me into a little music school. I think it was called the Yamaha Organ School or something like that. Mm-hmm. And you were supposed to play, you know, read music and play these songs on the Yamaha organs. But the thing is that because I had a pretty good ear for the music, so whenever I heard the song, I was supposed to be playing by notes on a sheet, you know. I could play it from my head by ear. And I had a really hard time pretending to be following something written on a piece of paper when I could already play it after like a couple of tries. I think the teacher realized that, and he said, for your next class, I'm going to move you up like two or three classes, so you will have more difficult songs. And yeah, I never showed up. So.
So earlier you were talking about playing with bands while you were younger. Did you ever play with anybody that was at the time famous or became famous?
Well, not famous internationally, I would say, but famous in Iceland, definitely. I was programming music for other groups, if you know what I mean. I was called into the studio. Can you add a little cool beat here or some synthesizer sounds here and there? But I think the biggest one I worked with, his name is Stefan Hilmarsson. And he's a really big singer here in Iceland. And I kind of co-produced two of his solo albums. And that was great fun. And yeah, so I would say he's kind of the biggest one in Iceland. If you can be big in Iceland, really.
Yeah, sure. You have been working with LazyTown now since 1996. Does that sound right to you?
Well, no, well, actually, it's early. I would say 1994. 93, 94 is when I had Matt Magnus like a couple of years earlier and doing music to his aerobic routines when he was competing in that. Yeah, so I remember him talking about this LazyTown thing in 93, 94. He did this book, and there was a CD with the book with some with little music. I'm not sure if any one of you fans out there have that music. That's the absolutely kind of the first LazyTown music that was ever done before the first play we did.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I certainly don't have it. I don't know if anybody else does. I've never, as far as I know, I've never heard it.
Well, I have a rare copy of that CD because it's, I think it's not available. So what I'll do, I should have told you this earlier, but what I'll do is just make a copy of that. It's not songs, so to speak. It's more like a moving game that Magnus was telling a story and I did the music to the story. It's more like kind of, oh, we're rowing the boat. Everybody row the boat and, oh, we have to run from the lion or something. I don't remember exactly now. And yeah, it was a really clever thing at the time, and it still is. And many of the things he was talking about then, I saw him do, you know, all the way to the end.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to get a copy of that and to share it with all the fans, and I'm sure they'd love to hear it.
Definitely. I'll work on that ASAP.
Awesome. Here I have a question from a fan named Parviz from Tajikistan. Who wants to know what other kind of work you did at LazyTown aside from composing the music?
I was working with LazyTown, obviously, in 94, 95 on this, you know, writing the music to the first play. And then we did Robbie Rotten in LazyTown at the National Theatre 99, 2000. And I was involved in that, you know, writing the music. But soon after that, I would say in the year 2000, I started to get more involved in other work for LazyTown. Magnus did this energy campaign, or LazyTown did this energy campaign here in Iceland, where kids at a certain age all got sent a book with stickers. And so I was working on that project, you know, writing text or going over text with Magnus and writing music to commercials to support that campaign. And soon it just evolved that I kind of stopped doing my music for commercials and jingles, and started to spend more and more time at the LazyTown office, which was a really small office at the time, only three people working there. Magnus was constantly traveling then, trying to, you know, promote the stuff he had done, and had this huge belief that LazyTown could make it. Yeah, so I was just at the office and just started to show up daily. And then he did this trailer or this pilot. I'm not sure what he would say. It's this little thing, because he needed to have some visuals when he was flying abroad and showing people this. So we worked on that, and after the deal with Nickelodeon, when we actually kind of started everything, I started to work on story ideas a little bit, and I was involved in that to begin with. And then in season two, I was even more involved in kind of coming up with stories or working on stories, going over things. And I also, other jobs I used to do at LazyTown is I ran the Radio LazyTown, which was a 24/7 radio station, kind of automated radio station, but still had to be programmed. And I was choosing the songs and setting that up. And I also used to go over the dubbed languages that came in, you know, when it was being dubbed in another country, I would take a first pass to approve voices. Yeah, this is a good Siki and this is a good sport, because it's a, or can you make the Mayo sound a little bit more like this? And so that was another thing I did besides music in LazyTown.
So back to your work as a composer, could you tell us a little bit about the process in which a song is composed for an episode? A lot of fans are really interested in hearing about this process, including Job from California, Katya from El Salvador, and a fan that goes by the name Miss Boku.
Well, obviously, because I was involved in the story creation when we were trying to come up with stories, sometimes I would just sit in on meetings, even if it wasn't my story or if I wasn't contributing anything. I would know really early on what the episode would, you know, be about, what the story would be covering. And in each of these meetings, we kind of mentioned the song, you know, where is the song going to fit? Because that was a difficult task, where to fit the song sometimes. So when we knew where we would kind of fit the song, we all knew what the feeling or what the story in the song should be telling to drive the story. Sometimes you couldn't have a song to drive the story. You would just almost have to make a pause in the episode and have a song. But sometimes this song could drive the story, if you know what I mean. And I don't know, I'm one of those persons that goes on kind of first instinct. And usually after those meetings, I would sit down and just have like a piano sound on my keyboard and, you know, see what would happen. And yeah, usually the first idea I worked on, it evolved from that. Very rarely it happened that I would come up with like five different ideas for a song and I would then pick from one, or Magnus would pick from one. And for a couple of reasons, we didn't have time really to do that. We had to trust that we were good at what we were doing and just go with the first idea and work on it from that. So to describe the process then after that is that I would work on the song and Magnus would be involved in that. He would come and have a listen and give his kind of go. And that was all fine with me. It's kind of his creation, his vision. And he had usually kind of a certain sound or a certain thing in his head. And I think that's one of the reasons why me and Magnus worked really well and closely together for so many years, is that we were usually on the same page. He doesn't know music, so to speak. I mean, he knows what he likes, but he can't read or write music. So he would have to kind of describe it to me, what he was looking for. And I guess you guys have seen him, you know, he's a bit animated and sometimes, you know, uses strange kind of stories to describe what he's looking for. And that's fine. Some people didn't understand it, but I just understand immediately what he wanted. So when he said, you know, and the song goes like this, and here we're just sailing slowly on the water, and the song, even if the song had nothing to do with sailing or water, I knew he was just talking about, I want the song to kind of calm down. And then now up here, we're running up the mountain and the lion is chasing us. And I know he wanted something, yeah, victorious in the song. You know, something big is happening here. And this goes almost both for the songs and the underscore. That was it. And if you want me to describe what would happen after that, yeah, we would work on the lyrics at the same time. In the beginning, we had Mark Valenti. He worked on many of the lyrics. And Mark Saslow. Then as things progressed, I started to be more involved in the lyrics. And I'm not sure how that came about. I think I actually blame it on kind of lack of time. We didn't have time to wait for lyrics, so I just started writing them. So from season 3 and season 4, I think I wrote most of the lyrics. And some of the lyrics in season 1, I wrote completely also. And then I would kind of get a demo going. I would call in either Juliana or Chloe to get the kind of correct key for them to sing in. And this was all happening pretty fast, believe me. You know, sometimes I was doing that on a Monday, and the video was going to be shot on Thursday. So in that little time, I would have to find time with Juliana and Chloe to practice the song, then get them in to record the songs. And the other actors, if I was having backing vocals, I needed them to come in from the set, run into the music studio. And that was the great thing about having everything under one roof, is that we could get people in and out pretty fast. If they had a free, you know, spare 10 minutes there, I would get them and I would talk to the assistant director and tell him in the morning, I'm going to need this person for 15 minutes today and this person for an hour. And he would kind of try to sort out the time. We did this as we went along in the production period, instead of having everything ready before we started production. And that was a good and a bad thing in a way to do it that way.
About how long would you say would it take for a song to be just in your mind to complete?
I would say on an average, maybe let's say a song was worked on, let's say a 3 weeks period. I would be working a little bit on it on the story meeting and then making the first demo. But if I put everything together, I would say about a week.
For one song, you'd make a song in a week?
Yeah, from Monday till Friday.
Wow.
If I would be working 9 to 6, you know, every day for a week, that would be kind of writing the song, making a demo, getting it approved, finding the key, doing a rough arrangement, recording the artists, and then working on the final kind of production of the song.
Bing Bang is the song that you wrote the fastest, is that right?
Yeah, actually some of the songs that came out the fastest, and Bing Bang is one of them, I would say two or three others are songs that are really memorable from the show. And I can mention them here if you want to. So it was Bing Bang, obviously. And then it was Anything Can Happen, Cooking by the Book, and the Pirate Song. I would say all of those, all of the hooks in these songs. Maybe I worked a little bit on the verses, but the main melody that gets stuck in everybody's head is just came out almost from just sitting down and playing it out almost in one go.
And you are the genius that wrote the lyrics, "It's a piece of cake to bake a pretty cake," is that right?
Yeah, I wrote that line. The song was written around that line, the melody. First, I had the, you know, "It's a piece of cake to bake a pretty cake." And came after we had the words. Usually, I had some sort of melody and we would fit the words into the melody. In this case, it was the other way around. We had this funny line, "It's a piece of cake." So I almost can't say it. And also, you know, you gotta never use a messy recipe and things like that. But the great thing about that song, and I think the Bing Bang song as well, is it's what's so catchy about it. It's not the melody. Well, of course, it's also the melody, but I think it's the way the melody and the words work together. You almost want to sing it. There's something fun that makes you smile about saying "Bing Bang Diggy Riggy Dong" or saying, you know, "Never use a messy recipe." It's, dude, I'm not sure if I can
no,
explain.
No, I know that. Exactly what you mean, man. I know exactly what you're saying about that.
Yeah.
So speaking of song demos, Allison from England actually had a specific question regarding those. She was wondering if you sing them yourself or if the cast sings just over a generic melody track that they have lyrics to.
So in season one, we used to get a singer in called Margaret Eyre to do the demos. She's a famous singer here in Iceland and a good friend of mine. And Margaret Eyre is actually the voice of Trixie in the song Step by Step. I don't remember why she was the final voice in that song, because the woman that was Trixie at that time, she could sing. But maybe we thought Margaret was better or something. I'm not quite sure. But anyway, Margaret used to do the demos to begin with. And I would give Juliana those versions with Margaret's voice on top of them for Juliana to practice. But that kind of evolved as well. And soon, I think in season two, but mainly season three and season four, I was just singing all the demos myself. You know, I'm not a singer, not at all, but I can keep a tune. You know, I can hold a tune. And it was difficult for me to hear my own voice because, you know, I think I'm quite nasal and ridiculous. Yeah, that's what everybody thinks about the voice. But then I just got over it and just started singing the demos myself, and it saved time. It was easier for me to explain the notes I was hitting. Sometimes I would have to transform my voice to be in a different key so Chloe would understand, you know, what I was doing. But I would say season one and two, we had the actors doing it, or an outside person. In season three and four, I was doing it myself.
Are we ever going to hear the unreleased Mountie versions of the song?
No.
So this next question comes from a fan who goes by the handle of Sportafake, and he is from Mexico City. He wants to know if you could tell us an interesting story about the development of a specific LazyTown song.
Yeah, there's an interesting story behind All Together from season three. I was struggling with that song, and then just time was running out. And I remember it was Monday morning, and I didn't have anything. And they were going to shoot the video on Wednesday. So I had to go to the production department and tell them that the song isn't ready. You will have to reschedule for the video to be shot on Thursday, even Friday, because I still don't have a song. I didn't have a demo even. I had nothing. Then I realized I just had to sit down and write something now. And that was, they agreed to kind of move the video to Friday, but they said we cannot move it anymore. And at the end of the day, we really need a demo of the song. There's no ifs and buts because, you know, Chloe has to learn the song and we have to figure out how the video is going to be and so on and so on. So I sat down and I started playing with chords. I started using the chords from that are in the chorus. And Magnus wanted this to actually to be a fast song, but it's not that fast. I think right. It's like 106 or 10 beats per minute. But it has this kind of groove behind it. I started playing with drums on top of those chords. And I think it was about 11 o'clock Monday when I had that going. I just had that kind of looping and I started singing some sort of catchy hook. I was looking for a catchy hook on top of those chords. And just did it again and again and again until I, this, oh, way, oh, oh, way, oh, way, oh, oh, way, oh, all together came out. But I always thought I would change the words, oh, way, oh, you know. I was thinking it, that was just kind of dummy words I was coming up with just to sing anything. But I was always picturing, you know, together we're gonna make it something. Dun-dun-dun. It was gonna be words. But I just had the Oweo thing. I got Magnus for like 5 minutes to run from the studio around 12 o'clock on Monday. And I played this for him. And before I could tell him that Oweo was just dummy words, I said, okay, this is what I got. Listen. And he said, brilliant. I really love the Oweo. Oh, really? I said, yeah, yeah. Let's keep the Oweo. That's brilliant. Oh, and so I didn't tell him that I was planning something completely different. I was planning to make some words for that. So we just kept the Oweo. But then they had to do a little break on the set. And I think that was about 3 o'clock. And I had this idea. They had to stop because they were moving the cameras and moving the set. So I asked the production manager if I could run in with my recording equipment and get everybody in the studio to form a little choir and sing Oweo Oweo all together. That's what we did. So the backing chorus in that song is, you know, it's the makeup artist, it's the carpenters and the painters. They are all singing in a big choir, this Oweo. And I recorded that like 4 times and then mixed that together to form this cute choir in the background. And when I had that kind of choir thing going, that was finished about 4 o'clock. And I had the chords there. I had the beat going. I had this Oweo voices. The rest of the song just came together in, almost in a couple of hours. And I was so excited because this was both kind of like a new sound to LazyTown, I thought. These big choir backing vocals. And I finished kind of writing the song that Monday afternoon and into Monday evening. And on Tuesday morning, I got Chloe in to find the right key. And actually, I knew this was the correct key for her. And I had already recorded this big choir, so there was no way going back. But yeah, it was a perfect key for her. And she sang the song on Wednesday. And we shot the video on part of it on Thursday and part of it on Friday. And then I finished the final arrangement of the song the week after. There's like this big drum pattern in there. Chicka 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 ching. You know this. We wanted to make this kind of almost like a little Brazilian feel, football feel for
yeah,
it.
And I think you got that nailed. I think you did a really good job with that.
Yeah, so that was the first one that came to mind because I think this is one of the best songs from season 3. And sometimes things just happen like this.
Awesome, man. That's a great story. I have another question here from Henry, who is from Berlin. And he wanted to know if there were any LazyTown songs that, for one reason or another, just never made it out of the studio and to this day remain unheard by any fans.
I think there are only like a couple of songs that never made it. The first song I worked on for season 3 was the surprise song, Life Can Be a Surprise. I started working on that song and I was really happy with it. I thought it was kind of sweet, and we knew that Stephanie was going to be singing it, kind of walking through the woods. And then I played that song for Magnus. This is kind of when we were getting back into production, the production period of season 3. And I called Magnus, you know, asked him to come into the studio, and I played this for him. And he said, yeah, this is one of the worst songs I've ever heard.
God. Oh, man.
And I was like blown away. I said, really? Yeah. And he said, I think you're just out of practice because we haven't been in production for a little while now. I said, I'm really surprised because I think this is a good melody. And he said, nope. Maybe it's because we had so much time back then. This is kind of 3 months before everything kicked off. We were just almost chilling, kind of, you know, comparing to how manic it is in production period. But I was just playing along, you know, just working on little things here and there. So I said, yeah, just throw that away, never play it again, and just start again. I'm really glad you did, because the song I came up with after that, which is the song we used, this is a much better and a much stronger song. But that song is still in my files. That's the first one that comes to mind. Some other songs maybe changed a little after Magnus gave his comments. Maybe they got a little faster or more powerful, or I would change the ending of the chorus or something. But no, I wouldn't say there are many songs, and maybe one other song that never made it. The song for Lazy Scouts, the first demo of that also got killed. It never made it. It was a much more of a marching song because I had kind of scouts in my head, and they kind of, I don't know, maybe they don't do marching, but for some reason I saw scouts marching, so I made this dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, you know, kind of this feel, almost like a marching band playing and Robbie kind of leading the guys in this marching, victorious scouting song. And I'm really glad that got killed. And I'm not sure Magnus even ever got to hear that. I think it was just me that listened to it the day after and said, no, this is so boring. And so I started again. And fortunately, because that's one of the songs I really like, you know, the Get Lazy song, you know, Get Lazy.
The website I'm doing this for is called getlazy.net, which I'm sure you can figure out where the name for that comes from.
Brilliant, yeah.
So that's the motto. So you also do underscoring for the episodes, and while I was out there last year, I was actually lucky enough to watch you do some of this. But could you tell us a little bit about how you approach underscoring an episode and maybe how it differs from how you write a song?
Yeah, definitely. That's a whole different process, obviously. I think I can even go back to 92, 93 when I was doing the music to Magnus's aerobic routines. Because what we did there is almost score music to his movements. I mean, if he would stand up and do little robotic moves or do his jump split or whatever, I would record that and then make sounds to that to make it powerful. And that was the approach when we started scoring the episode, is that Sportacus, to make him even more powerful, we would have these accents almost on every single move he did. And I guess you've all seen when he does his signature move, you have this dun, dun, dun. Then you have the little theme from No One's Lazy in Lazy Town, dun, 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 which is the dun, 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 dun. I would use this theme for Sportacus. And if you watch the episodes closely, I don't know, maybe you know these guys, but Sportacus moves in rhythm almost every single move when he's jumping, flipping, saving, or it's all on beat. Me and Magnus realized when we were trying to figure out what is the tempo of Sportacus, and I can tell you it's 168 beats per minute. That's the tempo he moves in, and that's really fast. That is actually the tempo of the song No One's Lazy in Lazy Town. Anyway, so that's Sportacus. He has music. When he's on screen, there's music. The same goes for Robbie Rotten. When he's sneaking around, I would use classical kind of evil guy notes. Dun, 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 dun. And I think this music is a mixture of, it's Tom and Jerry in a way, and then mixed in with kind of this epic movie music we hear on modern movies even. So it's mixing those two worlds together. And Lazy Town has music, I would say, almost through underscoring through all of the episode, one way or the other. You hear music constantly, you know, quack, quack, wah, 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 you know, these little musical bits to add to the humor or to the excitement or awkwardness of Robbie or whatever. There's constantly little musical notes going on behind. Sometimes, personally, I thought we were doing way too much underscoring. Because when I would hear the episodes on telly over here, I just heard constant music. And I thought, people must be going mad. But that was just part of the Lazy Town world. It's these really fast edited, you know, images, bright colors, and this music. It's just, that was Lazy Town, really. But it takes about a week, I would say, week to couple of weeks, depending on how much time I had to underscore a whole episode. Again, Magnus had a lot to say there. He had a special feeling about where the main power should be or where the fastest bit should be. And even after working on many, many episodes, he would still want to come in and have a listen, and not criticizing it, not at all, but kind of commenting on it and make this bit faster, make this quieter, and so on. So
it's funny that you mentioned the BPM of No One's Lazy in Lazytown, because I actually found that 84 BPM, which is half of 168, is actually the perfect speed for me to jog at. I swear, I swear.
So then you must be jogging on every other tempo, or every other beat, though.
Exactly, just kind of, trotting along.
So you're half as fast as Spartacus.
Oh man, I have a long way to go. So a fan who goes by the name Bobbleby, who I'm not sure where he's from, but I think it's the United States, he wants to know how you think your music has evolved over the years.
Oh, that's an interesting question, and it may be hard for me to judge, but when I listen back to the original songs, well, the songs from season one, I think they're kind of simpler. And I'm not saying that's a good or bad thing, but some of them are even more, I wouldn't use the word childish, but more naive, maybe, in a good way. You know, I'm not saying that is a bad thing, not at all. But as we progressed in season three and season four, maybe season four the most, I was more looking into what was happening around me musically, on the charts, the sounds. I was kind of updating the sounds I was using, because in season one, I was sometimes using a bit dated sounds, I think. Some of it sounded even a little bit 80s.
It's interesting you say that, because I always kind of thought that the song Go For It had a kind of an 80s, like, aerobics video vibe to it. What do you think?
I totally agree.
Yeah.
That's one of the songs that Magnus had kind of a really strong opinion on. And actually, I think that song must be in 168 beats per minute. Usually the songs that Magnus had kind of the most comments about, Go For It, and also Let's Go, if you remember. Let's go, let's run. Dun, 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 dun. Let's go. That song, I think that song is also 168 beats per minute. And those are the songs that Magnus really wanted to be in this, I wouldn't say aerobic, he never mentioned that, but in this fast tempo that makes you want to move. So Go For It is definitely a bit of a 80s aerobic thing. Yeah.
And you had, Britney Spears in there, and the Vanga Boys, all these bands you're ripping off of, brazenly.
I wouldn't call it ripping.
No, I'm just playing.
No. I know what you mean. What I like to do personally is, like with Vanga Boys, so that was almost like a tribute to the sound. And the same goes for I Am a Prince, which is obviously an early Britney kind of lookalike of that production and that sound. It was almost like a tribute to those songs, because I think both what Britney had and Vanga Boys, and is that they had this quality of, putting a smile on a three-year-old as well as a 40-year-old. There was something about this music, even if it was kind of, like a bubblegum, you enjoy it intensely for the first few minutes you listen to it, and then you just stop listening to them. They don't have the same depth as, let's say, Queen or ABBA songs, or, they're just kind of like really simple pop songs. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what I'm saying, but I agree that I used to kind of hint at some of those songs. Sometimes it was quite obvious, like with Vanga Boys and Britney. Sometimes it's more subtle.
A fan named Nathan, who is also from England, he only decided to ask one question today, so it's got to be a pretty good one.
Okay, Nathan.
Nathan's favorite song is Galaxy, but he wants to know what your favorite LazyTown song is.
That's a really good question. There are many good songs, I think, which I have kind of special ties for different reasons too, but the song that I never get bored of, really, well, I don't get bored of any of them, what am I saying? But the song that often pops into my head is, maybe it's a cliche, but it's the pirate song. I think there's something intensely catchy about the da 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 ba da bum, this melody. I often find myself humming that melody out of nowhere, maybe in just the shop, picking up groceries. All of a sudden, I'm humming that melody, or whistling it, hoping that nobody sees me, think I'm going mad. You know, he's at
Sure.
Mount Ika again, singing his own songs. So I would have to name that song, and also because I was really glad and proud when I saw that song got kind of like a life of its own on the internet, and
Yeah, it did.
that made me really happy. And even a rock group has made a cover of it.
Yeah, the one from like Scotland or Ireland, somewhere like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Ailstorm.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Yeah.
But I also have to mention another song, which is "We Will Be Friends" from season 2, the only slow song we've really done. Yeah, so "We Will Be Friends" is also a song that's dear to me, and I think that song has huge potential actually, and that's one of the songs I would wanna redo even today and get a professional singer to. Not saying that Juliana wasn't professional, but you know, like a grown up singer to do and make a modern version of it, update the sounds and so on.
Do you think that that's something that you might actually do, or just kind of a fantasy?
I think that's something I might actually do. I'm really planning to pick some of the LazyTown songs, get singers to kind of to change the verses a little bit maybe and update the sound, or just do it mainly for my own entertainment and maybe just publishing them online for friends and fans. Maybe somebody will be interested in it, you know, use it as a little kind of, what would you call it, like a show reel or something.
Yeah, well, I think that sounds really cool. And you have my support. You have plenty of follower support. And we're not going to hold you to it or anything, but it'd be really awesome if you did do that.
Yes, that's definitely my plan. I'm working on setting up my new studio here. And that's one of the things I really want to do.
Allison had a question kind of related to this. She wanted to know if you actually listen to your own work. If we went through your music playlist, would we find Bing Bang or 20 Times Time or You Are a Pirate or anything like that?
To be absolutely honest, no, it's not on my playlist, but it's on my iPod, definitely. No, so I don't listen to it on a daily basis or anything like that. But sometimes when I'm just, you know, chilling in front of the computer, just browsing, I sometimes go through YouTube videos and listen to them there mainly. It's more for kind of reminiscing or nostalgic feel, to get that feeling instead of kind of just listening to them and enjoying them.
Here's a question. When you're listening to these old songs on YouTube or wherever, do you ever come across one that you're just like, oh man, what is this? How did I even put this out?
No, I can't really say that. Not in that way. There's sometimes, you know, these, I should have spent more time on mixing that, or I should have chosen a different drum sound for that. But I wouldn't say there's no song which I'm just like, what was I thinking? You know, and I'm not saying that in kind of, you know, showy, offy kind of a way. I just can't think of a song that I really disliked from the series. Sometimes I think, you know, this song could have been better or worked on a little more. But there's nothing I really dislike, I would say.
Are you willing to name any names, or are you just kind of going to leave it vague?
You know, one of the songs, when I listen to them back, which I would have wanted to work more on, is "Let's Go" from season 2. I think that's an okay song and it fitted well in the episode, but it's not one of my, I would say, my kind of melodies that sticks in your head and that you want to sing along to. It's difficult to sing, and maybe I didn't realize it until the dubbed languages started pouring in, and I could hear every singer was struggling with the song. Matias, who is the voice of Spartacus in the song, he's such a powerful singer and he can reach these really high notes. But this is not the melody in the chorus that you just want to sing along to. Let's go! Dum-dum, 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 let's go! It's just weird. So when I listen to that back, I think it's a good song in many ways, but the chorus is not kind of a sing-alongy, catchy. It doesn't make you want to sing with it for some reason. That's my feeling at least. So that's the first song that comes to mind, which I really wanted kind of to go back to and change, especially the chorus.
So we have another question from Henry, who is wanting to know what you make of the fact that your songs are remixed by fans.
I think that's absolutely wonderful, and I can't explain how proud I feel each time I hear that somebody has spent, you know, time working on my music, wanting to kind of make his own version. And I think that's what YouTube should be all about, really, kind of taking things and remaking them and remixing them. And it's almost like a new art form. And yeah. Instead of kind of constantly trying to sue people, and I would say that people should embrace it. This remixing, both video-wise and music-wise, should be, you know, welcomed and celebrated.
Yeah, LazyTown has a big remix culture with the music, videos, pictures, everything. A lot of people just love to mess with it and make things their own. And I think that is a very important part of what makes the LazyTown fan community stick together, and what makes it really special and fun for people to be a part of.
Yeah, I would even, and I even thought of it one time, but just legal reasons have stopped me from doing that. But that one time I was thinking if I should make maybe some of the beats available or a cappella things available. But unfortunately, just due to legal reasons, I'm not allowed to do that. But I would even have loved to make some of the sounds available, if you know the stems from the song. Maybe one day we can do that. I'm not sure, but that would be so much fun. And I can only imagine thinking back when, not saying when I was your age, but when I was kind of, when I had the time kind of to mess around with things and play with things, if all of a sudden Kraftwerk or something that I was a big fan of would all of a sudden release, here's a bunch of our sounds for you to play with, I would have, you know, I would have been so happy with that. So hopefully we can do that one day. But I really enjoy it, and I've heard so many great mixes, and I have to mention Pook's work on
Pookie's work, of course,
because she's really talented, and so many people are talented out there. But I really enjoyed all of the things she's done, for example.
Yeah, have you ever heard the reggae version of Galaxy?
No, I didn't know that existed.
So. Yeah, it's one of my favorite LazyTown covers or remixes that I've ever heard, and which may or may not have to do with the fact that my favorite LazyTown song is Galaxy, but it is one of my favorites, and it's from a guy named Dub Dragoon, and I'll have to send it to you after we're done here, because it's really great, and I think you'll like it.
Yeah.
So you've been working at LazyTown for 20 years, really. And the televised version of LazyTown just surpassed the 10-year mark. So do you have any favorite memories from working there all this time?
So many memories. I would think the overriding memory, you know, that kind of covers the whole thing is just the amount of talents under one roof when it came to the puppeteers or the writers, and seeing the guys work on the sets. We had this kind of a lounge room up in LazyTown. It was called the Hudson Room, named after the Hudson Hotel in New York. Don't ask me why, but it was just called the Hudson Room. And it was a really cool room with a billiard table, snooker table, and a cozy fireplace and leather chairs. And we often sat down and worked on story ideas there. It was so amazing to witness, sometimes just coming up with, you know, what about, I especially remember when Magnus said, what about if the mayor is a pilot and he has a little plane? I remember I was thinking, that how on earth are we going to do that? You know, that's, how are you going to do that? You know, we cannot build a plane. And then, you know, 1 month later, you see the guys pushing a plane. And that happened again and again, you know, with the castle and all those amazing sets. The talent that went into kind of drawing that, designing that, and then building that. My most enjoyable things was go on into the set when they were shooting this episode or that one and thinking, oh, they're working on this episode. I better check out what they made. And for example, in season 4, when they did the pyramid show, I remember being really excited, and there was a bus going around the building. Have you seen the sets? You know, have you seen what they made? And I went into the studio, and your jaw dropped every time. These people were so talented. All of these things, I'm not sure if people realize that this is all handmade. every single prop you will see, and Robbie's lair, and all the things he is working with, it's all kind of handmade, made by people in the nick of time, really. And so that's kind of the overriding memories when I get back, was getting the wow feeling when I saw those things. And then again, it's so gratifying to see something come together when you have words on paper, and then to see it start slowly starting to build up, and sitting in on meetings where people are saying, you know, this is not possible, and this is, we cannot do this. And then Magnus having this to believe in it can be done when people were about to give up. He would still have the drive to get everyone to push a little harder and try to come up with a new solution. And when I look back, I would say that's one of the things that comes first to mind. There's no one specific, you know, thing I can mention.
Well, when I was out there, I definitely got the exact same feeling where you walk in and, you know, you kind of have to bring yourself back down to earth and say, wait a minute, they're doing this for who? Five-year-olds? What? Are you sure all these people with all this amazing talent are doing all this for kids that probably won't even remember seeing this?
I think that's what kind of makes LazyTown stick out, and I think what's going to keep LazyTown alive for a long time is that this amount of energy and quality and hard work and these talented people putting everything in it, that's going to make it live.
LazyTown can go through periods of production and non-production, you know, sometimes spanning years. What kind of work do you do on the side when LazyTown is not in production? Do you do commercials still, or what kind of stuff do you do?
No, actually, there hasn't been much work on the side, because in between these big productions for LazyTown, we've been working on either live shows or campaigns with either various companies or even governments. Something has been going on even if we were not in production. The thing I've been working on, kind of, wouldn't say on the side, but after doing the live show in 2007 in the UK, I got to know these guys that produced that really well. A couple of companies that produced the show, Limelight and Fiery Angel is the name of those companies, and they have two specific roles. One of the companies is more of a production company, the other is kind of like financial production side of the company. So I got to know these guys really well, and they've done shows for other children's shows like Peppa Pig, Ben and Holly, and most recently Octonauts. And those television shows don't have a lot of music in the television shows themselves. So when they did the live shows, they needed live music. And I started working with them, writing songs for the live shows. And that's been a great experience. And I can picture myself working with these guys in the future, because they're such loving, hardworking people. And they did great things for LazyTown with the live shows, both the Pirate Adventure and the first one, Roboticus. Like I said, that I wouldn't say that's kind of on the side, but that's, I've been getting more and more involved with those guys. But I'm not working on commercials. Well, actually, I will do the occasional commercial, especially if it's a company I used to work for back in the days, and they need kind of, they want their melody to be updated or something I wrote 10 years ago or even more. I will sometimes work with them on making it shorter, faster, longer, or just update the sound of my melodies.
So this next question was by far the most popular. Almost everybody that asked the question had at least one regarding the current situation with LazyTown. We know that Magnus has sold LazyTown to Turner, and we know that the studio building is now up for sale. The fans are looking for some answers here. Now, I don't expect, you know, any official statements or anything like that, but, you know, do you have any answers to these questions that these fans might have?
So it's just mainly regarding the future of LazyTown?
Yeah, I would say that they're most concerned, honestly, about what's going to happen with the sets and the props and all this stuff that, you know, is really so important to LazyTown. What's going to happen with all that?
Yeah, so the situation with LazyTown at the moment is, well, as I guess you all know, we've stopped production and we've closed down the production facility here in Iceland, at least for now. The reason being is LazyTown was sold to Turner, and Turner kind of started production of season 3 and season 4 and kind of funded that. But now I think their feeling is that they have enough episodes almost to be what is called evergreen in this business, which means you can kind of start on season one up to season four, and you will have this package that TV stations like. You know, they will get the episodes to run for almost like 2 to 3 years with on-off breaks. And I think that was their goal with making season three and four, is just to have like a bigger package of episodes. And that's what they have now. LazyTown is quite expensive in production. And in the end of the day, this all has to do with business. And I don't know much about that side, but things have to make sense business-wise. If the product you're showing is not delivering the money you're putting into it, you will stop making that product, whatever that is. And I'm not saying LazyTown isn't making money for Turner. Turner needs television content first and foremost, and that's what LazyTown is giving them. I'm not sure Turner is really interested in the kind of licensing part of it so much. I'm just thinking out loud here. I haven't seen any kind of ideas about either new toys or new games that they can sell with the show. Hopefully some company will in the end, because I think there's a great opportunity there, which is kind of a win-win situation for everybody. And that's what Magnus always used to say. He used to say kind of the great thing about LazyTown is that everybody wins, is that when parents will spend money on something connected to LazyTown, they're doing something active and healthy for the children. And it's just a good business model. So I really hope that's, you know, gonna keep on going. But regarding the future of production, I honestly don't know. I would love to see kind of production start again. But at the moment, I doubt it. But what's going to happen to the sets and the props? That's a good question. It hasn't been destroyed or anything. I know it's been taken down in the studio and it's been packed away. But, this takes an enormous amount of space, and somebody has to kind of pay for the storage facilities and so, all of that. I know we had kind of dreams here in Iceland that maybe we could open up either some sort of like a museum, or work with kind of the artistic university over here, the art university. Everyone that sees the props and the sets up close just gets inspired on how, what you can make. So I hope they don't end up in boxes somewhere and then they will be thrown away in 10 years' time or anything. I really hope that someone will do something with them. So that's my hope. But honestly, I'm not sure what's going to happen.
Well, it would frankly break my heart if the stuff was just tossed away. So I also hope that that's not the case. You mentioned that Turner doesn't really have a whole lot to do with licensing, although a couple of fans were asking about soundtrack releases for the latest couple of seasons. Do you know anything about if Turner's thinking about that, or if they're going to get somebody to produce some CDs?
Yeah, the last thing I knew was that we have a partner in the States that is working on the music, at least season three. I'm not sure if there was a CD that came out or if it was
yeah,
just...
there was a CD here in the United States for season three, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that's going to happen also for season four, but maybe it goes straight to iTunes or... I'm not really sure about the situation, but I think it makes perfect sense to, not because I wrote the music, but it just makes perfect sense to release the songs one way or the other, because I think LazyTown is a special show. It has almost a new song in each episode. In a few episodes, we will hear a repeat of songs, especially from season one. But in season two, three, and four, there's a new song for each episode. And that makes LazyTown stand out. Music is such a universal thing. You can enjoy LazyTown by just listening to a couple of minutes song instead of sitting down and watching telly for half an hour or whatever. So I really hope the songs will get released. And actually, it's been on my list to contact somebody at Turner and, you know, have a conversation with them. Is there something that I can do to make that happen? You know, because I would love to see that happening. Like I say, not only for me, but just for LazyTown in general. And I think this has to be out there and live.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and I hope so as well. But with the future of LazyTown being currently pretty uncertain, Do you have any plans for maybe what you'd like to do with your career once, you know, your time at LazyTown comes to an end? You know, you were talking about working with the guys from the UK. You know, do you have something like that planned, or what do you think you want to do?
Yeah, for the past months, I've been kind of relaxing. I've been moving into a new house and putting my focus into that and into my kids and family. And so I haven't given it much thought. I know I'm definitely going to keep on working with my friends from England on the live shows they will be doing, as long as they want me to work on that. And then I have a few things on my kind of bucket list when it comes to music that I really want to do. And one of them is I want to write a musical for kids. I really want to be in kids' music and then in kids or teenage music. Well, mainly kids' music. Some people have asked me, you know, now that you've done kids' music, do you want to move up? I don't think it does necessarily as a step up to work for adults. I think if you're working for kids, you're actually working for adults. So I really enjoy that. And I think I have a talent for simple, catchy melodies that for some reason young kids pick easily up on, and that their parents or siblings can enjoy. Sometimes children music can get, with full respect to children's music, sometimes it can get a bit annoying. People will put a special hat on and think, you know, now I'm writing for children. It becomes really silly or simple. You know, just making pop music for children, that's what I really enjoy doing. And like I say, on my bucket list is making a musical with that in mind. I would just have to find, you know, the story and somebody to work on with that. And I have a couple of guys in mind that I've contacted. I'm not sure if I would go back into the making music to jingles and commercials. The only way you can live on that here in Iceland is to work almost 12 hours a day or even more, because the pay is not that good that you can basically live on it if you just go and want to work from 9 to 5, just because of the size of the market. I've also been planning to contact an agent in London maybe and see if anybody would be interested in working with me when it comes to children's shows, you know, other children's shows. Who knows what's going to happen, but I'm definitely going to try to keep on living off the music. So that's my plan for the moment.
So that just about does it for the direct LazyTown questions. And now we have kind of a round of miscellaneous questions, which mostly don't have to do with LazyTown, but some kind of touch on it. Our first question comes from Pook, who wants to know what you think about modern music.
I think modern music is great. I follow it closely. I have a brother 4 years younger than I am, and he used to be a DJ back in the days, and he feeds me with what's going on in kind of the dance music scene. And I've always loved dance music and just current dance music. I like this Swedish house music that's been coming out. When I say Swedish, I mean kind of like the Swedish house mafia. And yeah, that's kind of really melodic, powerful music, and I really enjoy that. Yeah, if there's one bit of music that I don't really follow, I would say it's kind of rap music or hip-hop music. I'm not into that really. But everything else, I just listen to the charts and enjoy it, like most of us, I guess.
So you've name-dropped Kraftwerk more than once already in this interview, and there were a lot of questions about what kind of music you personally like to listen to. So could you tell us a little bit about your own musical tastes?
Even if I mentioned Kraftwerk and I really enjoy them, I don't listen to them that often. Some of the music I've been listening to lately is kind of an old stuff, really. It's kind of an old soft jazz music for some reason. Stan Getz and Gilberto. I'm not sure if those names ring a bell. No, it's a famous album that came out in, I think, in 66, 67. A really famous album and a really good one. So I've been playing that quite a lot recently. I'm not sure why. One thing that I always like to put on is ABBA. And I've been listening to ABBA quite a lot lately, mainly because I saw a documentary on the telly the other day about ABBA, interview with the guys, and it was just so amazing what they did in, you know, when it came to music, their sound and their songwriting. Then I often put on playlists from YouTube, which is just almost like chill out music. Some people would call it kind of, I don't know, elevator music almost, or or hotel music, some people call it. It's kind of like this Cafe del Mar, Buddha Bar playlists. And that's music that just makes you kind of calm down, and it's nice to put on while you're cooking or just cleaning. So I often enjoy music that way, just to have it in the background without kind of really focusing on it. Yeah, so that's what I've been listening to lately. I don't have a specific taste, you know. I'm not like a hardcore follower of only this genre or this band or this artist. I will take kind of waves and listen to this for like a week and then go into something completely different for another week. I always like to have music around, and when I'm home, there's always music in the background most of the time.
And do you have maybe a favorite band or a favorite song?
Well, it goes back to the 80s period, really, when that was kind of my era of music, really. And I like the 80s music, especially when the kind of synthesizer groups were coming up, like OMD and Astrovox. I'm not sure if those names mean anything to you guys, but then you have to YouTube them if you don't recognize them. I would say a couple of songs that come to mind is the song Vienna with the group Astrovox, and then a song called Souvenir by the group OMD. What's special about these two songs, they're both quite slow, but really well-written songs and had a clever use of technology when it was coming up back then. So it's kind of cool sounds, and when cool sounds, good melody and good songwriting come together. So I would say these two songs stick out and something I would, you know, choose from a funeral almost.
So Allison wants to know what your preference is between analog music like vinyl and digital music.
I would like to sound all kind of nerdy and and say that, yeah, vinyl is the best sound, because some of my friends say so, you know, that's the real sound or something. But I think it's just, I have all these kind of analog synths which I haven't sold or thrown away, and I hopefully I never will. But slowly I've been starting to use digital plugins more and more, and that's just because it's much, much easier. And in the end of the day, I really don't think it's about the sound if it was analog or digital. You would never hear a song and say, you know, that's a great melody, but I don't like it because it's vinyl, or vice versa, you know. A good song is a good song, whether if it's digital or vinyl. But having said that, I own a record player kind of in a box, which has this function. You can plug in an iPod into it and listen to music there, but you can also put on an album. I haven't been using it that much, but I definitely hope to, you know, go up to the attic and dig out some of the old vinyl albums and start to use it more. Because I think the great thing about the records from the old days, the vinyl records, is that you would put song one on and then listen to, you know, the whole album, and you would literally have to physically change sides and listen to the other side. Nowadays, you have the opportunity of just making your own playlists and skipping songs that are maybe good songs. You're just not giving them a chance. And if something boring comes on, you just press skip. Not necessarily boring, but maybe something that's not interesting to you at this moment. But back in the days, I remember going to the store, buying an album, putting it on, you know, putting my headphones on, and spending an hour listening to the whole album. And while listening to the album, reading through the album cover and looking at the photos and reading everything about that album that was possible just from that album cover. You couldn't go and Google it or anything. That's how old I am. But I think that gave me a lot. And I have kids that are now 16 years old. And I've been trying to tell both of them that this new album with, let's say, One Direction or whatever they're into, listen, you know, please listen to the whole album. Just don't listen to the top three songs. Yeah, so I think that's important, and that's what kind of the vinyl gave us, was this connection to the music in a different way than the iPods give us today.
Here's a question. Do you play any instruments besides the keyboard?
Not really. I can pick up the guitar and do a few chords. But actually, it's a funny thing. A friend of mine gave me a ukulele for Christmas. So I have a ukulele, and I really want to learn to play the ukulele. And I know four chords now. There was also a little book that came with it, because sometimes I can picture myself just, you know, laying in bedroom or the sofa and just, you know, strumming a few chords and punching out a melody instead of, you know, going into the studio and turning on the computer and everything that's connected to that. And sometimes I think it would be nice to be in a different atmosphere. I've never owned a piano, but I would love to have a piano one day and actually learn how to play it properly. Like we mentioned earlier, I've never learned music, so to speak, and I can't read or write music, so to speak. So maybe I'll do that when I get old and wise, just to finally learn what I've been doing for the past years.
Yeah. So I have another question here from Bobblebee, and he wants to know what you would do with a day off if you had one, besides do interviews.
I remember I tried to create a new hobby a few years back. My hobby was now my work. And so when people would spend time, let's say in the evenings or something, attending to their hobby, I would just go to work. And that wasn't good. So I bought a camera and a couple of lenses. And I've always wanted to do more of that. And sometimes I would take the camera out and, you know, try to have a little shooting session just by myself, looking for something interesting. And always when I do that, it feels really gratifying. So I would definitely want to do more of that and even learn something about photography. Another thing I'm really interested in is cooking. And I would love to spend more time on that. Sometimes, you know, when you have kids, you're often just trying to, you know, feed them, really. You don't have time to work out this recipe. So maybe I would like to do more of that. If I had a perfect day off, yeah, I would say I would do go out, have a little walk with my camera, then go to the shop, pick up some ingredients, and then cook myself something Indian or Thai or something exotic and have a lovely meal.
This next question comes from Henry, and it's one that I actually really like. You touched upon it a little bit earlier, but Henry's question is, if you could have one of your songs covered by a famous singer, who would it be and which song would they sing?
Yeah, one artist I really like is the British singer and songwriter Lily Allen. I think her songs are awesome and her words even. She has this honesty in her songs and voice. So I would really love to hear Lily Allen do a cover of one of the Lazy Town songs. What song it would be? Let's say if she gave me a call and she would want me to choose a song. That's a really good question. The first thing that comes to mind maybe is I would love to hear her version of Life Can Be a Surprise from season 3. I think she would do a really cool job with that song.
Lazy Town has been dubbed in I don't even know how many languages, so many across the globe, really. What is it like hearing your music in a different language?
I think the words that comes to mind is fascinating is the first word. And the second word would be funny sometimes. It's just surreal hearing your songs in different languages. I think Lazy Town has been dubbed in close to 30 languages. Again, it's just a proud feeling and surreal and fascinating to listen to some of them.
Do you have a favorite language that it's dubbed in that's not Icelandic or English?
Yes, I would say the Italian versions are great. Maybe it's my fascination for the Italian language or the Spanish language. I love both of those languages. But there's especially something about the Italian language which I think totally fits the Lazy Town songs. It's such a singable language, and they do a really good job. So I would say that's kind of one of the first that comes to mind is the Italian one. I love that. And I sometimes actually play the songs in Italian. Absolutely brilliant and really well done. Actually, I think it's the Bulgarian versions as well were really well done.
You know, I think that is right. Only a few months ago, I got a collection of, I think, like the season 1 CD from, I think it was Bulgaria. And I opened it up to listen to it just to see what it was like. And I honestly wasn't really expecting anything that great. But I was surprised to see that it wasn't that bad. In fact, you know, it was probably one of the better ones that I've ever heard.
the people that were working on the songs in Bulgaria did an awesome job, and they contacted me, and some of the dubbing studios would just get me to approve kind of the voices and the first recordings, and then they would just keep on doing the job. But it's the people that put in the extra work and were asking for all the little, how did you get this effect and how is this harmony made up, and that really wanted to copy and do it perfectly, and Bulgaria and Italy are two of them. Maybe that's why I really like them, because they're really hardworking and cared deeply for the product. I'm not saying others didn't. It was more like a routine for them, or like a factory thing. It was just another job, you know, for the dubbing studio. But these guys took it really seriously. And the same goes actually for the French dubbing in France. They actually invited me to come over and visit them at the dubbing studio and give them points and work with the musical director. It was really well done.
So here I have a question from Sportafake. He wants to know what it's like recording music with Chloe Lang.
It's best to talk about Juliana and Chloe Lang at the same time, and just to explain the difference between them. Both of them, you know, obviously started out really young. I think Juliana was, 12 and Chloe 11. It was absolutely amazing working with both of them, and they're so talented, and it was just weird when I sometimes had to think, okay, I'm working with an 11-year-old girl. She's not 18 or anything, because they were so professional and always tried to do their absolutely best. But mainly because you ask about Chloe, she's one of the hardest working girls I've ever met, and she put 150% in everything she did. She had her day planned out, you know, she was working on school projects, then she had to kind of practice dancing, then she had to visit me and practice the songs, and she was always positive and energetic and always wanted to do her absolutely best. Like I said earlier, we had to kind of sometimes step back and realize, okay, we're working with a child, really. Because in the professional business, when there's a deadline and people are getting irritated and annoyed, you know, why is this not ready? And people will raise their voices. We had to kind of, like I said, step back and realize, okay, even if she was professional, she's not a fully grown-up professional. She's still a child, and she need time to kind of just play and have fun. But it was absolutely lovely working with her, and she was always smiling and happy, and her mother, Tina, was with us the whole time. She was always there by her side. The same goes for Juliana and Kalua, her late mother. I don't think people realize how much the parents matter for people like Juliana and Chloe to have the support of their mother or father. Their siblings would come and visit. We would try to do fun things, you know, for them. You know, give them obviously a day off so they could go and either drive around the country or visit the Blue Lagoon. It was lovely meeting both of them, and a really special experience working with, you know, these young kids really being so talented and working so hard.
Cool. I really applaud Chloe's openness with the fans. You know, she likes to talk to us and share things with us, and posts, you know, behind the scenes videos and cool stuff like that. Did you see that she went to I think the San Diego Comic-Con this last year as Stephanie?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she went there with, what's the guy's name that plays Sporticus here? James?
Yeah.
James something?
In the end of the day, I think it's, you can't forget or realize that you only survive because people want to meet you, see you, or hear what you've been doing. You're alive because of fans, if you know what I mean. I'm not saying anything with LazyTown, but sometimes when I see groups coming on into magazines or artists saying, you know, the most difficult thing about being a number one is the fame that goes with it. It's so hard struggling with the fame. And I'm always thinking, well, then stop doing these interviews and stop making this music. It's not rocket science. It's like you're working towards that, being famous and getting yourself known, and then moaning about it when it happens. I've never understood that.
Kind of similar to our last question, Parviz wants to know what it's like working with Magnus Skiving. You've touched on it a little bit over this interview, but you know, do you have anything else to say about what it's like to work with him?
Yeah, I can add to that. You know, working with Magnus has just been an amazing experience, because I've never met a more dedicated person to what he wants ever in my life, and I'm not sure I ever will. This is his idea. He came up with it in 1993. for me. I'm not exactly sure when exactly, but because I was working with him back then and I was working with him in the last day in the studio, he still had the same kind of power and energy behind what he wanted all that time. I think many people would have given up many times. I almost think that's normal and human nature. If, let's say, you will get 50 no's to your idea, you will just go, well, I must do something else then. But he always had this thought in his mind that with each no he got in the beginning, he was one step closer to the yes. And that's his character, really. He has a really hard time taking no for an answer. You know, some people got irritated, to be honest, when he was pushing and pushing. But I think when people look behind him, you know, him pushing and him saying no to things made people often, most of the time, do it better and learn something new. You won't meet that many people in your lifetime that have this drive and the energy. It was, like I say, frustrating at moments, but I found it really easy working with him. And I just realized that this was, and has been from the beginning, this was his vision. It was his idea and it was his neck on the line, if it would make it commercially or not. And it did. And so if something would go wrong, he would take the fall and the people he had hired would just, you know, get paid. Yeah. So I really admire him and I wish him all the best in the future. But it was, like I say, frustrating sometimes, but when I look back, it was all worth it.
Yeah, I actually had a chance to meet him while I was out in Iceland, as you know. And I was surprised at myself for keeping myself together during this discussion because, you know, ooh, I'm meeting Spartacus and all that. But I think that most of that actually had to do with the fact that he was just pretty easy to talk to. So I'm rambling on here, so I digress. Our next question is from Henry. He has one more for you. And he wants to know, have you ever considered writing a song for the Eurovision Song Contest?
Many people ask me, especially here in Iceland. Eurovision is one of the biggest things here in Iceland. I know some countries, you know, don't give it a second thought. But here in Iceland, we take it pretty seriously. Many people, you know, especially after hearing the Lazytown music, because some of them sound like classic Eurovision songs, kind of really catchy and easy to memorize. But I think Eurovision has actually progressed, and some of the songs that have been kind of winning lately are not maybe the simplest of melodies or the most Eurovision-like songs, like you think Eurovision songs should be like. But anyway, yes, I have given it thought. And actually, I had decided to send a song into the Icelandic competition this year. But due to kind of personal reasons, I was moving houses. And then all of a sudden, I saw in the papers, you know, they have chosen the 10 songs that are going to compete. And I was just like, well, next year. So I'm going to try to take part in that one time or the other. That's one thing on the bucket list, mainly because I'm not sure Eurovision gives you such a career. It has done for a couple of acts. You can almost count them on, you know, the finger of one hand, the bands or the acts that have actually made it after Eurovision. But it's more about the fun of it and taking part in just the Eurovision culture, which I think is great. And in the end of the day, it's about celebrating music, which I always like.
Well, I'm from the United States, so I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. But thanks anyway.
You guys have to look up Eurovision on YouTube and really enjoy the songs.
Sounds like some socialist crap from Europe. I don't want it. So we have one more question here from Sportafake as well. He wants to know if you've ever considered writing music specifically for teenagers.
Yeah, I've actually thought about it because I have to do something else now after Lazytown has kind of stopped production. And I mentioned that before, you know, about the things I want to do. And I want to focus on children's music. Sometimes I'm thinking to myself, am I saying that because I don't want to almost put my neck on the line and try to be in the adult contemporary pop teenage business? But I'm not sure that's the reason. I just think it's a really tough world where people that are trying to make the decisions on the sound and songs can be marketing people and publishing. I just think it's a really, really tough world. And you will have to have a lot of energy and drive to stay in that race, while kind of working in the children's business and industry I wouldn't say kind of less demanding, but in on a totally different way. You're not trying to come up with the latest, coolest sound, working with the latest, hippest artist, always looking what's behind the corner. You have more breathing space to work with talented people. And unfortunately, even if I don't know it exactly, I can only imagine that this industry is more about money than good songwriting. When it comes to, let's say, group like One Direction and these big artists, I think there's an army of marketing people and, people looking for what's the latest sound, what's the coolest thing, and trying to get their artists to do that. Obviously, you have many artists that are true to themselves, and I think Lily Allen, which I mentioned before, is one of them. She just does whatever comes into her head, and she's made it, and obviously many artists have. So after having, given this long speech, I would say my answer to that is yes. I've thought about just writing songs and see if an agent would be willing to put that forward to a publishing company or something. But at the same time, I'm not doing anything to follow up on it, but maybe I will one day.
This interview is nearly over, but before we wrap it up, I would like to do kind of a bit of a lightning round where I will ask you a series of very short questions very quickly, and you will respond with, one to two word responses, maybe yes or no. What do you think about that?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. 3, 2, 1, go. What year were you born?
1967.
What's your favorite color?
Blue.
Coca-Cola or Pepsi?
Coca-Cola.
What is your greatest fear?
Crane flies.
Have you ever skipped a rope? Have you ever played ball, ever jumped around, or have you ever danced at all?
Yes to all of those questions. I have done all
Awesome.
of them.
Do you believe in aliens?
Yes.
Can you do your best Elvis impersonation? Brilliant. If Iceland is not part of the World Cup, who do you root for?
Brazil. No, sorry. Sorry. I root for Holland.
What's your favorite movie?
Shawshank Redemption.
And finally, who is better, the Backstreet Boys or NSYNC?
Backstreet Boys,
That
without a
is the
doubt.
right answer. You are absolutely correct. Well, Mounty, that brings us to the end of the interview here. I can't thank you enough for your time today to do this with me. And I think I can speak for all of the fans of LazyTown when I say thank you for all the great work that you've done over so many years. That your music has had a profound effect on many people of all ages and all ethnicities, including myself. And we wish you the best of luck with whatever happens with your future, whether it's with LazyTown or not.
Thank you so much. And I just want to say at the end that I'm so grateful for this opportunity to talk to you guys, for all the beautiful work you've done for LazyTown, and your interest and in my music and LazyTown in general. It's just unbelievable. I never would have dreamed to be so lucky when I was young, starting out in the music business, to have this opportunity. And it's all because of you guys. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for listening to this interview brought to you by GetLazy.net. If you'd like to learn many great facts, such as how to bing all of your bangs, whether the best things in life really are free, and how to never, ever use a messy recipe again, come on over and join the fun at GetLazy.net/forums.